All right. Good morning, church. Mark is out of town this weekend, so you get to spend a little bit of time with me today. Have you ever thought what your last words would be? Like, it would be great if we could plan them, right? It would be great if we, the last thing that we said in our time on earth was something that we could plan for. But more often than not, death comes like a thief in the night. And so whatever it is that we just said, that's it. That wraps up our life. What's the last thing you said? Like if something were to happen here and you were, what would your final words have been? There's some interesting books and websites that chronicle these last words of famous and notable people. I have a few of them today. Local Pistol Pete Maravich, his last words were, "I feel great." He was playing a basketball game, and he said he felt great, and apparently he was not great. Sir Winston Churchill's last words were, "I'm bored with it all," which sounds about right for him. Humphrey Bogart said, and I'm not really sure the significance here, "I should never have switched from scotch to martinis." So, not really sure how that would have helped him, but he evidently thought it did. Bob Hope's last words were in response to a question his wife asked. She asked, "Where would you want to be buried?" And he said, "Surprise me." George Harrison, the famous Beatle, looked at his wife and son and said, "Love one another." Right? Wouldn't you like those to be your last words? Sir Arthur Conan Doyle, the writer of the Sherlock Holmes series, who died at age 71, was in his garden and he turned to his wife and he said, "You are wonderful." And then he clutched his chest and died. The TV writer and announcer, a man named Charles Gusman, he said he wanted his last words to always be something notable. And he was nearing the end, and his daughter reminded him of that. And says he pulled off his oxygen mask, and he said, "And now a word from our sponsor." And those were the last words. Groucho Marx, famous comedian, his last words were, "This is no way to live." And then, as was his style, he predicted the future once again. Nostradamus said, "Tomorrow at sunrise, I shall no longer be here." And he was right, right? Last words. We also have last words that come before important moments or significant events. I was remembering the time that I got ready to go to college, and I grew up in Phoenix, and I was preparing to go to Harding, which is in Searcy, Arkansas. So it's this, you know, cross-country trip, and we got up in the morning, and my dad was driving me out there, and we'd all wondered how my mom was gonna take this. You know, how this was going to go, because I was her oldest child. And we were in the garage, and we just finished getting everything loaded up. And my mom walked out and gave me a hug and leaned back and looked in my face and said, "Go and do great things." Powerful last words. If we think of last words from actors and historical figures, and even mothers, as having some kind of significance, how much more important are the last words of the Son of God? If you have your Bible today, turn with me to Matthew chapter 28. This comes after Jesus has come in the flesh. He has come to in a virgin birth and is born of Mary and raised by her. He begins his ministry and heals many people and tells them about God and his love and shows them what really matters and how they should live. He is ultimately betrayed and crucified in a brutal and terrible way. But in his act of pure power and to show that death and corruption have nothing over him, he rose again on the third day and walked out of the tomb and returned to his disciples and showed them, I'm back. We have won. And then he does leave the earth, but he ascends into heaven. He knew he was going. He knew that his time in an earthly body was up. And so he comes on this hill, and Matthew doesn't tell us this, but Mark does, that after he says these words, he ascends. If you'll be with me in Matthew 28, verse 18, he says, then Jesus came to them and said, all authority in heaven and on earth has been given to me. Therefore, go and make disciples of all nations, baptizing them in the name of the Father and the Son and of the Holy Spirit, and teaching them to obey everything I have commanded you. And surely I am with you always, to the very end of the age. In his last statement to his followers, Jesus says, go. A number of years ago, there was a TV show called Mission Impossible. And they've actually had a few different reiterations. There was a film franchise that I just think is a bunch of explosions. But there was this common thread in all these reiterations of it, where at the very beginning, it's about a group of spies that save the world in an organization that you've never even heard of because they're so secret and so special you can't even talk about it. But they would, at the very beginning, get a message passed to them in some clandestine way. And they would listen to it or watch it, and it would tell them about a potential threat to the world that needed to be stopped, but it was going to require a great sacrifice. It was incredibly dangerous. And then the person giving the message would say, your mission, if you choose to accept it, is this way that you can go and save the world. And then, you know, to add to the drama, it said, and now if anything happens, the secretary will disavow any knowledge of you, and in 5 seconds, this message will self-destruct. And it would blow up, and then the adventure would begin where they would go and save the world. I've often thought, what would it be like if in one of those episodes they were to receive this message and say, your message, your mission, if you choose to accept it, and they go, I'll pass. Like, what would that be like? So we would see 3 minutes of them getting past this mission and hearing all about it and how the world's in danger, and then, I don't know, they watch Netflix and their PJs the rest of the time while the world comes crashing down. If TV has taught us anything, it's that when you're given an opportunity to save the world, you take it, right? Even more than that, Jesus, in his final words, says, you need to go and save the world. But unlike the previous message, Jesus doesn't say this is your mission if you choose to accept it. The choice is already assumed. It's not optional. It is not negotiable. He simply says, go. Now, this may be where you say, okay, I've heard messages. This is the Great Commission. I know all about this. And you decide to check out and say, I know where you're going with this. Or in your head, you've run through a list of excuses where you say, all right, well, I've not really been sharing the message, but it's not really my gift. Or you say, that's kind of for extroverts, for ministers. Blaine, that's what we pay you for. That's what car salesmen are for. But I'm going to ask you to stay with me. Because I'm going to argue this morning that Jesus is doing something different than we've often said. See, Jesus is not telling them to go and do. He is telling them to go and be. And here's what I mean by that. Look at who Jesus is in this very moment that he is speaking to them. Jesus is the incarnation of God. He is God in the flesh, and he represents the God who sends. Throughout history, God is always a God who goes. He goes outside of himself when he creates the world. He goes into the garden and he walks with Adam. He goes up on Mount Sinai and gives them the law and shows them how to live. He brings with him judges and protectors to save his people. He brings prophets to get them back on track. And in his ultimate act of going, Jesus comes in the flesh, the embodiment of the God who goes. God is a verb. God goes. And so Jesus, as he's speaking to these people, he says, listen, you bear the image of the God who goes. It is what you are. You are a going people. And if you bear his image, you will do the same thing. And if you were baptized into me, Jesus says, you have been baptized into my death, burial, and resurrection. And when God looks at you, he sees me. As Paul says in Galatians, we are clothed with Christ. And if we are clothed with the incarnate Son of God, the one who was sent, then we are the one who goes. And Jesus looks at them and he says, remember who you are. You are the ones who go. Because we have a very special mission. Our mission is to make sure that the world knows about him. Our mission is to join with God in redeeming what has been lost, in repairing what has been broken, restoring what needs to be fixed. After the fall, everything came apart, but God, through Jesus, set things right, and he invites us to join in the process. Not as a task that needs to be completed, but as a full embodiment of who he made us to be. You see, sometimes we can imagine that Jesus is leaving and he gives a to-do list. And I think for a long time, that's how I saw this passage. Like, Jesus was going up and he's like, all right, don't forget to tell everyone about me. And it's like, oh, we were doing so good. Things seem so easy. We're all just going to love each other. And now I've got to have awkward conversations with people, right? Like, Jesus, though, is not leaving a cosmic to-do list with his last words. His last words are a powerful reminder of who they were created to be. God is not helpless if we don't give the message. He would do it another way. But he knew that we needed to join him. We needed to join with him in delivering this message so that we might come into our true selves. In the late 90s, there was a movement within evangelical churches where they recognized that the world around them was more lost than we had given it credit for. That we had imagined America as a Christian nation and had assumed that everybody knew about Jesus and they had either accepted him or not accepted him. And if they wanted to be Christians, they would just go to church. And there was an understanding suddenly that, wait a minute, that may not be true. And so a movement was started to help churches regain their sense of mission. And it was called the Missional Church Movement. And the problem with naming it that was that it was redundant. It was like calling a movement for firefighting firefighters, or teaching teachers, or protecting police officers or smart LSU grads. This was something that did not need to be stated, that should already be known. But in a way, the church had been so divorced from its own identity that a great movement was needed to remind us who we are. Because we know it doesn't go without saying. There are so many that need to know Jesus, and so many Christians who are not telling them. The world is somewhere between 7 and 8 billion people, and about 2 billion know Jesus in some way. That's a lot of people who still need this message. But what's lost is more than just an activity that's not being done, and not just a mission or a message that's not being sent. But the followers of Jesus are losing a sense of who they are and who they're meant to be. Donald Miller tells a story about, he's an author and speaker, and he had a man come up to him after one of his speaking engagements and said, "Okay, look, I've got this problem with my daughter, and I don't know what to do." He said, "She is, she's about 15. She has started, like, wearing all black, and she never smiles. And she started dating this boy who treats her really poorly, and he's no good for her. And she won't listen to us. Like, we try to tell her to break up." And he said, "You got to understand. Like, we've done everything for these kids. Like, we've taken them to church. We give them everything that they need. Like, she doesn't have to work. We've put her and her brother in good schools. Like, we've done everything we can, and yet we're losing her." And Donald Miller, he thinks about it for a minute, and he says, "I don't have a lot of time to." He needed to be somewhere right after that, and he said, "All right, it looks like the story you're telling her is boring." And he kind of left it with that and left, which, you know, doesn't give a lot more. But the man took that to heart, and he said, "What is the story that we're telling our daughter? What is the story that our family is sharing with the world?" And he realized the story was boring. It was, go to school, get a job, make good money, be safe and secure, and move on to the next generation. That was boring, and that girl didn't want that story. And so the dad started researching, and he found this this ministry in Mexico City that needed to build a children's home, and they needed a certain amount of money to do that. And he looked at the family and the income, and he said, "I've got an idea." And he brought the whole family in, and they sat down, and he said, "I found out about this ministry that needs to build a new children's home. And we do really well here, but I think that we can do this. Now, we're going to have to make all kinds of sacrifices, but our family is going to join this mission, and we're going to be the ones who make this happen." And so the family started doing that. They started working. They cut things. They sold things. Everything in the family became about helping these children in Mexico. And later the man met with Donald Miller. He said, I want to tell you about what's happened. He said, as we started working on this project, As we started looking for every way to go and help with these children and go over there and build and send money and everything that goes on with that," he said, "over time I saw a change in my daughter." He said, "She stopped dressing in all black. She started to smile again. And she kicked the boyfriend to the curb." And he said, and this is the point that Donald Miller makes, he said, because girls who are heroes in the story don't want to live as victims. And what I would add, a hero has a mission. We are called to be heroes. And we have a mission. But many of us are telling a boring story. We need to embrace not just the mission, but who we were called to be as heroes. Sometimes I hear people, you know, as a minister, they'll meet with me and they'll go, you know, I'm so spiritually dry. I'm just apathetic. And they just describe how they're not excited about anything and it doesn't seem to make sense. They kind of believe God is out there, but what do I do? I'm just not feeling it. And I'll begin asking, first of all, are you spending time with God? And almost always they say no. You can't be excited about a God you don't spend time with. But I'll also ask, what are you doing in his kingdom? How are you living into this mission that you've been given? Virtually never is a person living with a sense of mission feeling apathetic, feeling bored, feeling like it doesn't matter. You see, sometimes we think that if we get everything right in this gathering, it'll make it easy. Like, if we get the way that we organize worship right, then the church will grow. If we get more progressive, everything will be great. If we go back to the way that we used to do things, then the church will go because we're finally doing things right. We only will reach the world for Jesus when we tell people. The church will only grow when you embrace your mission and you share what Jesus has done for you. Not as an institution, not waiting for the leaders to get everything right, but for embracing the people around you as individual followers of Jesus and making sure they know. So how are you doing with your mission? The mission that is part of you. What are you doing to make sure the world knows Jesus? A lot of times the first answers people give back are like, well, I tithe and give to the church, which is good. You should. You're supposed to do that. Or I come to church, and we're all here, right? Preaching to the people that showed up to church today. That's good. But those are like the baseline things. It would be like if you asked me about my health and you said, hey, Blaine, how you doing? And I go, well, I breathe today and I drink some water. So you go, okay, all right, Blaine. But those are the baseline, right? Like, that's just how you keep from dying. Like, coming to church, spending time in community, actively involving in giving. Those are baseline things, right? Worship is a baseline thing. Embracing the mission requires intentionality. It requires a desire to go beyond yourself and make sure that people know Jesus and come to love what you love. Listen, the point of this isn't to shame anyone or to make you feel guilty. I know for years a lot of these lessons would do that for me, right? When we talk about mission, I would think of all the ways that I'm not doing that. But this is an invitation, an encouragement to get on track, to look ahead to the church of the future and ask, what is your part of that? What is your mission to make that happen? Kids, y'all with me today? I want you to ask your parents at lunch or at dinner tonight, ask them how your family is working towards God's mission. And if they say, well, we take you to church, say, that's good. What else? Parents, this is a good time to discuss with your kids ways in which your family can reach your neighborhood, your community, the world around you. This is a great opportunity to say, okay, who do we need to reach and how can we get there? I got three things to ask you to do today. Three things are this. All right. I missed a little segment of my sermon. I gotta go start over. Just kidding. All right, I got three things I want you to do today. First, I want you to make a list of five people that you need to reach. And I just want you to pray for them. You will be amazed in this moment how God uses that prayer to work things. And not just that I want you to pray for him one time, but I want you to pray for him every day. Five people. I've done this recently and discovered how amazing it is that God will open some of those doors. Like people that I don't talk to regularly will call. I'll get visits. Conversations will open up that never opened up before. God is powerfully working. This is not a mission that we create on our own. This is a mission that God is already doing, and he just invites us to be part of it. The second is I ask you as a family or as a life group, as a group of friends who are Christians and follow Jesus, that you pray for direction and for opportunities. Your life group should be praying for how you can reach others. Your family should be praying for how you can reach others. Your college ministry, youth ministry, how can you reach others? And then the third is to discuss those options. What are things that you see? We might be amazed when you start asking questions about what can we do, and that no matter how overwhelming the problems seem, that God is providing opportunities and ways. And the answers are all within our community. I'm reminded that there are people throughout history who never lose sight of their message. If we look at 1 Corinthians chapter 9, I love this message from Paul. Paul says in verse 19, "Though I am free and belong to no one, I've made myself a slave to everyone to win as many as possible. To the Jews, I became like a Jew to win the Jews. To those under the law, I became like one under the law, though I myself am not under the law, so as to win those under the law. To those not having the law, I became like one not having the law, though I'm not free from God's law, but am under Christ's law, so as to win those not having the law. To the weak, I became weak to win the weak. I've become all things to all people, so that by all possible means, I might save some." Paul was a man who never forgot his mission. He never forgot what was most important. And if you look at what all of these things that he mentions have in common, they were all things that he had to give up some privilege, some sense of entitlement, some sense of power to reach people where they were at. He never lost sight of that. Paul understood his mission. Now, I want to remind you, though, that this is not something that you just have to go outside yourself to learn how to do. Deep down, this is something you already know. This is part of how you were created. I'm going to give a confession here. Kate, I'm going to out us. We do things different in Arizona and in Tennessee. And when I moved here 14 years ago, I just didn't know how important LSU football is. I didn't know. My parents never told me. I was not raised in this way. And it was right after a national championship year, so there was a lot of extra hype. And in fact, I remember the first fall, like in Arizona, there was football. We liked it, but you know, Saturdays Arizona State played, and either you cared or you didn't. And if you did, maybe you watched it on TV. Maybe you didn't. That's not how it works here. And I remember I was trying to plan something for a Saturday. It was like Saturday afternoon. And I said, "All right, hey, let's do this." And one of the teenage boys goes, "But LSU plays that day." And I said, "Well," he said, "well, yeah, I know, but like, we're going to do it in the afternoon. Doesn't LSU play that night?" And he said, "LSU plays that day." And I said, okay, but, all right, but are you going to the game? No, but LSU plays that day. And just walked off. Like, it was just, and I thought, oh, this poor child doesn't, he's stuck in a loop and he can't get out. Like, and we went to, and a little bit later, I was over at LSU, I think I was helping in the concession stands, and I saw the 200,000 people outside the stadium, and then the other 100,000 in the stadium, and I went, oh, LSU plays today, right? Look, that kind of, here's where I'm going to out us. That stuff drove me crazy, right? I hated how we had to plan around LSU's schedule, how everybody wanted to talk about LSU football. We would watch for the first 2 years. We would watch the LSU games, and we would root against them. I told you, this is a confession time. I'm just confessing. And we would root against LSU every single week. We would. And, like, I also, there was a lot of debate the year that they got the national championship, because apparently there are two national champions. And I loved just pretending to be dumb about it and just use the term code national champion whenever I got an opportunity. And it made people so mad. And I really enjoyed it. You know why? Because I didn't like all this LSU stuff. But over time, I found myself watching games with friends here. And I found myself wanting to see success. And I found myself caught up when they did well. And I found myself joining in with all of you in that excitement. It was not something that outside myself I would have ever found. I would have never decided to follow this team from Southern Louisiana. But you taught me to love what you love. The mission of Jesus is simply that. That you help people love what you love. And you don't lose sight. That you keep a single-minded purpose like Paul did. Jesus, when you come back to his great commission, his last words really aren't go. Tells them to go, tells them to make disciples, tells them to teach people to obey, like make sure that this message is deep in people's hearts. But his last words are not that. His last words, can we get those back up? And surely I am with you. Always, to the very end of the age. This is not something that we're asked to do on our own. It is something that we join with God, who is always with us. How are you doing with your mission? If you need to get it on track, how can you do that? Maybe I lost you earlier when I mentioned following Jesus. You've been gone. You're like, okay, you talk about following Jesus. I'm not there. If you would like to know Jesus, I would love to tell you about him. I'm sure there are a lot of people here that would love to tell you about him. If you want to know what the big deal is, why we're all gathered here, ask someone. We would love that opportunity. If you do know, If you know him and you're like, I just need to take one more step, and you haven't made the decision to be baptized, today is the day. Don't wait any longer. Embrace him as your Lord and join this mission that you were already intended to be a part of. We have one baptism in a moment, so if you wanted to be baptized also, it would be no big deal. Don't put it off any longer. If you feel like your mission has gotten off track and you would like prayers, or if you've got anything else that's going on that you'd like us to pray about, in a moment the elders and the staff will be at the sides of the room and we would love to pray with you. God is working in your life, God is working in our lives, and we want to join with you in prayer to make sure that we understand that together. So do that now as we stand and sing.